Welcome to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nygut. Thanks for joining us for today's show. The status of the election remains just about what it was when we left you yesterday. There are votes still being counted in precincts, in counties. Most of them have now certified their ballots, but there are still some questions as to whether additional ballots might be counted in the days ahead. Stacey Abrams still has a long way to go if she wants to force either a recount or a runoff. I think she's about still, Greg Bluestein, you're with us today. How far is she from a runoff? About 18,000 votes?
She's about 17,700 votes net that she needs to get to a runoff, and about 15,000 or so for a recount.
A recount. All right, that's Greg Bluestein. You know him as the guy whose byline is in every edition, almost every news page of the AJC these days. He's been doing a remarkable job covering the election. Thanks for joining us today, Greg.
Thank you for having me.
We're also watching for Carolyn Bordeaux and Rob Woodall in the 7th District. That race is a lot closer, and as a result of a couple of rulings, there's at least a possibility that she's now within 900 votes. Fewer than that now?
Yeah, we were up late last night. Gwinnett County Provisionals came in late last night. That's what narrowed the gap for Abrams, and it also narrowed the gap a little bit for Carolyn Bordeaux. It's now about 533 gap between them.
That's why we have you on this show, Bluestein.
And there are still maybe about roughly around 400 or so to 500 or so votes that are still outstanding there.
All right. We will talk about all of that. Buddy Darden is sitting right across from you. He's the former Democratic congressman from Cobb County. Buddy, always a pleasure to have you here.
Make that blue Cobb County.
We'll talk a little about blue Cobb County in a few minutes. Amy Steigerwald, Georgia State University professor of political science, is back with us. Amy, you spent a long election night with us a week ago. You didn't leave here till 1 in the morning, and it's great to have you back.
Thank you. It's great to be back. It was super fun.
And it's been a long time since we have been able to have Chip Lake on the show. Chip is a longtime Republican consultant, and we haven't had you on because for a good part of the last year, you have been running the very successful lieutenant governor's campaign of Jeff Duncan.
That's correct, and it's good to be back. It's probably been about 4, 5, 6 months,
yeah,
Bill, so
at least.
Time flies. But
at least.
Have been watching the show on Facebook Live when I can, supporting Heath Garrett, my landlord, when he comes on the show, and so it's good to be back. Thanks for having me.
By the way, you can watch us on Facebook Live. Just go to the GPB news page and join us there. Tweet us at PoliticsGPB. Greg, there's some news about Chip Lake that you all broke in the Political Insider at Politically Georgia this morning.
For some reason or another, he's going to be Jeff Duncan's chief of staff, so he's going to go full-time at the Capitol.
So congratulations on a big
Congrats.
Appointment.
Look, I look forward to it. I had an opportunity to meet with Jeff for the first time about just a little over 2 years ago, and he was very gracious to mention in his election night speech, he referenced the breakfast, and he didn't put all the details into the reference because I think I don't think I was really encouraging him to run at the time. I was making sure that he knew the obstacles that were in front of him, but I knew at that point in time if it was something he decided to do that I wanted to be a part of that team, and I'm honored that he's asked me to come on board and be his chief of staff, and I'm going to shut down Glendale Strategies, which is the company that I've had for, I guess, about 8 years now, and go in-house, and I'm really, really excited about it. Can't wait for that opportunity, and I'm just happy our race is over.
Buddy, yeah, I'll bet
no
you are.
Around
buddy,
with it.
Buddy, Chip is being a little modest. Jeff Duncan, actually, in things he said after the election, said he probably couldn't have done it without Lake.
I want to extend my heartiest congratulations to Chip and of course, to Lieutenant Governor-elect Duncan as well. This is a great accomplishment. And incidentally, his going over to help the Lieutenant Governor get started is what we call getting your ticket punch. He'll go over there. He'll bring great value. He won't stay there the rest of his life, I assure you, but he'll help him get off to a good start, and so he won't say anything stupid.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you.
All right.
He
All
won't
right.
say anything stupid, or I won't say anything stupid.
He won't say anything stupid because of you.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
All right.
Appreciate that.
Let's move ahead with the show. Greg, let me start with news that really broke yesterday, but there was a news story today. There was an update to the story. Yesterday, there were some 100, basically, protesters or demonstrators in the rotunda at the Capitol. They were people who were demanding that all the votes be counted. They were clearly Stacey Abrams on Stacey Abrams' side in this thing. What happened?
Yeah, there was a rally, and they were chanting, count the votes repeatedly. And there's a rule under the Gold Dome that when lawmakers are in session, there's not allowed to be chants and yelling and whatever. So there's a lot of state troopers who are sort of surrounding them and kind of telling the demonstrators the rules. Well, State Senator Nikema Williams was on was kind of looking over the protest, and she said she saw some of her constituents. So she went down there to show support for them. When doing one of the chants, Capitol Police officers came up to her and in arresting other demonstrators also put plastic ties around her, despite her saying that, hey, I'm a state senator. This is my job. I'm here showing constituents. I'm not disobeying any orders. I'm just standing here with my constituents. They let her off, and she was in Fulton County Jail for more than 5 hours before being released last night and charged with obstruction.
I want to give everybody a chance to weigh in on how that all unfolded yesterday. But before we do, let's play a little sound from Nikema Williams this morning. And of course, they're in a special session at the Capitol right now. We'll talk about that later in the show. This morning, Nikema Williams asked for a point of personal privilege. And she took to the well to talk about the incident yesterday. Here's just a little of what she said.
I did not put on my to-do list to get arrested yesterday. I did not plan to go to the Fulton County Jail and to tell that I had to take my clothes off and be strip searched. I am a member of this body, and I stood with my constituents in the rotunda of the Capitol, and the Capitol Police handcuffed me and took me to jail. I stayed in the Fulton County Jail for over 5 hours yesterday with criminals from all walks of life. I don't know what they did, but I know I didn't deserve to be there. I got out last night, and I went home, and I held my child, and I laid in bed with my husband, and we talked about what today would bring. And he asked if I wanted to stay home today. And there was a little bit inside of me that honestly wanted to stay in bed and wanted to stay home, but that's not who I am. That's not what I was elected to do. And I will always stand up for what is just, what is fair, and what is right. And that's what I did yesterday.
Nikema Williams in the well of the state Senate this morning. Amy, one of the reasons this is something we should be talking about today, I think, is in the aftermath of the election, when we still have a governor's race that has to be formally complete, all the votes completed, with the recriminations, with the attacks back and forth between the two campaigns, with some of the harsh rhetoric from the Kemp campaign about Abrams seeking to continue with court cases to get the votes counted. This is just one more incident that it strikes me is creating a terrible, is positioning the next couple of months downtown in a very terrible way. How do we heal when this is the sort of thing that's going on?
I think that's a good point because I, as I said, sort of on election night, that I think one of the things that really comes out of these election results is that we have, right there, it is much more that we're more of a purple state. It is not entirely clear red and blue. There's going to be a lot more diversity by party this year down at the state legislature and even in the congressional delegation. And I think that one of the things we have to do is figure out how do we move past this experience and into governing, right, where the elections are ending, right? The campaigns are ending, the elections are ending. And all of these, both Senate-elect and those that are already there and are continuing, are going to have to work together. And whomever the new governor is going to have to work with them. And so there are, I think, real concerns here. And it doesn't, in many ways, if we're going to talk optics, help that the person who was singled out was a woman of color.
She was one of, I think, 15 of the demonstrators who were arrested. But, you know, buddy, I think, look, I wasn't there, to the best of my knowledge. None of us in the studio were there. You weren't there, were you?
No, I was in the House gallery when it happened.
Okay, so I think it's reasonable to ask a question. These were state troopers who made the arrest. I don't think it was Capitol Police, who might have recognized Nikema Williams. I don't know for a fact. But beyond Nikema Williams, is this, I don't want to second guess law enforcement, but was that the best way to handle this situation?
I watched it on television, and the optics, as Amy mentioned, were terrible. Of course, I'm a friend of Senator Kima Williams and her husband, Leslie Small. I knew them both before they got married, so maybe I have a personal feeling here that might cover it, but this was totally unwarranted, and this is a black mark against the state of Georgia, in my opinion.
Chip, you're going to be you're in a slightly awkward position already, because now that we know you're going to be a chief of staff to a Republican lieutenant governor. But I do think it's fair to say to you that you and your boss are going to be part of it. Brian Kemp seems to be increasingly likely to become governor of Georgia. And you and your boss are going to be part of this effort to figure out how we make a peace and start working again, Democrat and Republican, with some sense of civility.
Yeah, it's always hard to do, especially hard to do after an election cycle. I saw things have been very busy on our end as well. I saw a photo of Senator Williams' arrest yesterday, and I made the assumption and I was wrong to make the assumption that she wanted to get arrested. Many times in these protests, you want to do that so you can have that photo, you can have publicity, and you can put a spotlight on the issue that it is that you're trying to protest. It just seems really bizarre that a member of the legislature, Democrat or Republican, House member or Senate member, can get arrested inside the confines of the state capitol campus during a legislative session. I don't know how that happened.
In charge with obstructing the General Assembly when she's a member of the General Assembly. And I'm glad you pointed that out, because that was one of the things I was going to point out too, is that she went to great pains, as you can hear the emotion sort of dripping from her voice at the chamber this morning, making it very clear that this was not some sort of publicity stunt. She did not wake up wanting to get arrested. She did not plan on being in jail for 5 hours last night away from her husband and her child. And secondly, the other thing that really struck me is my inbox was filled with Democratic critiques and blasting what happened from every sort of Democratic leader, including Stacey Abrams and the minority leader of the Democratic Senate, Steve Henson. I didn't hear a single leading Republican criticize what happened. The fact that a sitting member of the Georgia General Assembly was arrested and was not trying to, make a scene.
Contrary to law, because she has legislative immunity and freedom from arrest during a legislative session, except for a felony or a breach of the peace.
You got it. And this was, of course, doing the General Assembly, because there was a special session that started Tuesday.
But now, again, to be fair about this, there is a rule, Greg, I believe, and maybe you mentioned it and I just missed it. There is, I believe, a rule about disrupting by making a lot of noise when a session is going on. And from what I'm told, there's no question that the chanting could be heard on the third floor of the Capitol. So that these demonstrators probably were in violation of a basic rule of the I don't know whose rules these are. Maybe they're passed by the legislature itself. They were apparently in violation of that rule. The question is, what's the best way to handle
them? You got it. And what Senator Williams has said was she was not among the people chanting or yelling.
Yeah, but Yeah, but see, now that's interesting to me, Amy. I understand that Nkema Williams reacted to this in a way that I would have. I mean, it was deeply personal. And I also believe that some of the Abrams people were down at the Capitol this morning talking about this in a broader way, saying, Nkema Williams should never have been taken, but the rest of us were treated badly, too. And it seems to me that's the larger point here is, again, if you're looking, if Brian Kemp is going to be the next governor, is this the way you want to start your tenure as governor of Georgia with this sort of incident going on?
I think it does make it difficult, because no matter who it is that eventually ends up winning, they're going to need to work with the members of the legislature on the various issues that they want to address. Yes, there is a Republican majority in both of the houses, but it is ever shrinking. And again, on a lot of these issues, the people that especially live in the certain areas, it is more partisan diverse than people might realize, right? There are, in fact, a number of sort of the more rural areas that are represented by, for example, Democratic senators and Democratic representatives. And so it's not as though it's sort of all in lockstep. And I think it sort of speaks more broadly to the sort of changes that we're seeing within demographics and how there's going to be communication moving forward. And it's concerning because this is not the picture you want out there.
Changes in demographics and changes in geography as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, we, you know, I didn't think the gap between suburban voters and rural voters could get any larger than what mm-hmm. it was 2 years ago, but it was about 10 or 11 points yeah. bigger gap. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I do think, to put an end to this part of the conversation about Nikema Williams, at least, I did think it was interesting, Greg. She talked about the fact that there was this is a historic seat, Senate District 39, and she was at pains to say, I didn't go there to get arrested, because the previous occupant of that office very well might have gone there to get arrested, yeah. Vincent Ford.
Vincent Ford, and he was known for you know, doing a lot of attention-grabbing moves, like getting arrested, and he did get arrested at protests yeah. All over the state, but this is that's not really her style. She's very much an activist. Yeah. And very much a progressive, but she's not exactly along the same lines as Vincent Ford.
All right, so let's move on. And Greg, you've already given us a very good basic picture of where we stand right now. 18,000 votes keeping Stacey Abrams from a runoff. Now that 7th district race, 500 votes. Do we still have votes to be counted in Gwinnett County?
We do. We have two different batches of votes. We have batches of votes that were alleged signature mismatches. That's about 100. We've heard different estimates, but 150 of them. And also about, let's say, 300 to 400 votes that are affected by a federal ruling yesterday. And these were ballots that had incorrect information on their birth dates or omissions that a federal judge said should be counted. So Gwinnett is now going to take until tomorrow to certify their votes as they go through these one by one to try to tally them up.
If I were Congressman Udall, Congressman Woodall's lawyer, I remember I served under Congressman Udall.
I bet you did.
But when we talk about Congressman Rob Woodall, if I were his lawyer, I would do exactly what he's doing, though. Let the process work out and not be involved in any action to try to change what is going on right now in the courts and in Gwinnett County, because the ultimate decider in this race will be the House of Representatives. And the House of Representatives in a...
The U.S. House of Representatives.
The U.S. House of Representatives in a highly contested, controversial election, the House has been known to reverse what the state has certified.
What is the vote? Do you know under what circumstances this would go to the House? How many votes would be separating the two candidates?
There's no rule. It is really the House in and of itself determines who its members are. However, it used that power very, very sparingly. Two different times we had votes on that when I was in the House of Representatives. One time we upheld this certification. One time we denied it. But the point is, with Georgia already having had so many charges out here and so many issues raised, it's important that this election come out as clean as possible for Rob Woodall, because he doesn't have the luxury of going up to the House of Representatives and having a majority who can turn around and support
him. Amy, you're nodding very vigorously about what Buddy's saying.
So during my brief stint, actually, of working on Capitol Hill, that was one of the things that I actually got tasked to do research on, because I'm good at research.
Because you're a research wizard.
I'm really good at research. And both the House and the Senate have total control over whether or not they want to sit someone. And so they have the ability, when the certifications come in, to reject them. Now, normally that's under very narrow circumstances, but one that could cause it is if there are what can see evidence of some sort of malfeasance or error in what's happening. I should also note that we talk a lot about recounts. That's another reason for a recount, actually, under Georgia state law. It's either requested by the candidate if they get under 1% difference between the two candidates, but it can also be put in by the Secretary of State's office if they see evidence of there being error or some sort of fraud or issues in the wow. transparency of the vote.
I'm glad you raised that, because a little known fact here that the Secretary of State, in this case, her discretion, can call a recount.
Mm-hmm. Well, Chip, even more importantly, though, Carolyn Bordeaux nor the Secretary of State can call a recount until the election is certified. Yes. Right. And all these lawsuits are pre-certification lawsuits. Yep. So right. The timing on that will be interesting as well.
And the federal judge's ruling said this can't be certified until Friday at 5 p.m. at the earliest, and it might be sometime next week.
All right. I have to admit that it's been very difficult for me to keep all these lawsuits straight, Greg. One of the lawsuits that I still have a little one of the rulings that I've still had a little difficulty in understanding, and I'd love it if our listeners can get a better sense of this, certainly than from me. Judge Totenberg issued the ruling the other day, a major ruling in which she essentially she did not actually extend the certification deadline past Tuesday, yesterday at 5 o'clock or whatever
it was. For the counties.
For the counties. She said the Secretary of State can't certify now until at least the end of the week. But then there was other language about even after certification, having the right for people to look at votes. And I'm very confused by that.
Yeah, there's a couple of things she did. She required the Secretary of State's office to have a hotline for people who cast provisional ballots so they can know the status of their provisional ballot. She required counties to do sort of rolling updates of how these provisional ballots are being tallied rather than waiting till the very end of certification to do so. As you mentioned, she said that the state can't certify until Friday at 5 p.m. because there were some rumors that the state might certify as early as today. That's not going to happen. And then the biggest thing she did that is still also the biggest question is she ordered the election officials to review as many as 27,000 provisional ballots that were cast because voters' registration or identification couldn't be verified at the polls. What we're not sure is whether or not that means those
additional ballots
would actually be counted.
She's not sure either. And if you read the complaint and then you read the order, you would think that she was giving an order on a different case. It is unbelievable. You don't need to be an attorney to read those two things and go, did I get the wrong order from this complaint? You put federal judges in a 48-hour notice to make a decision on something as important as this, and they can't take 3 or 4 or 5 weeks to come up to speed on how the process is. We have 159 counties in Georgia. All these counties run their own election.
Yeah.
And one of the things I learned from the runoff between Jeff Duncan and David Schaefer, which was a very, very close runoff, I was shocked to learn that counties have complete discretion as to how they count provisional ballots.
So all of this is going on, Amy, and Georgia remains under a national cloud. Every newspaper, the New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, websites like Politico, 538, they all talk about the process, the confusing and perhaps illegal, certainly unethical process by which this election is being played out. They're not really on the ground here. I mean, I do find at times that a Greg Bluestein gets what's happening much better than a New York Times reporter who may be writing from Washington or New York. Nevertheless, we continue under a cloud of controversy as to whether we're running an honest election.
I think it's very difficult. And I think one of the things that people forget, and granted, I was a part of it, but election night is initial ballots coming in. Those are not, in fact, the final answers. When we talk about a race being called, that is done only on votes that were cast on that day. Sometimes it includes early ballots. Sometimes it may not, actually, depending on how they're counted. It definitely doesn't include absentee and provisional ballots. And what most people don't realize is that the certification of elections always happens 2, 3, 4 weeks after the actual election takes place. And those numbers always change from what we originally see because they're still coming in. And so I think some of the difficulty here is that we see a lot of that change. I think the other difficulty is that there have been the various lawsuits that were brought well before the election itself even started, and all of that, that go into these sort of broader debates really about is voting a right or is it a privilege? And I think that that's some of it.
Greg, so that begs the question, when are we going to know officially that we have a new governor of Georgia?
Well, Brian Kemp and his campaign have been saying for about a week now that it's already over. They sent another press release today saying, again, that it's over and that there's not enough ballots left outstanding. Stacey Abrams' campaign had a similar press conference saying there could be as many as 20,000 ballots still outstanding. What we what we're looking for next, the big next threshold, if a judge doesn't delay it, is going to be that state certification.
Well, here's what I'm wondering. So, buddy, you know, here's my the nightmare scenario on all this. The Abrams people continue to say that they feel that the votes haven't all been counted. The Kemp people say, well, of course they have been. The Kemp people, Nathan Deal has already stood in the governor's office and conferred the title on Brian Kemp. I mean, my nightmare scenario is Brian Kemp moves forward with his plans for an inauguration and a federal court steps in and here's a restraining order as to whether he should be able to take office or not.
Well, I think that's unlikely. In fact,
I hope so.
I'm somewhat sympathetic to Stacey Abrams' position to count all the votes, it's becoming really almost a mathematical impossibility now for it to happen. But I admire her staying in there and getting all the votes counted so we know the actual result, because there's nothing worse if you're a voter and you wonder, is my vote being counted? So I think it's good to let it play out, and that, well, there's no hurry. We've got until the second Monday in January. We've got plenty of time.
Go ahead, Chip.
Three things you can't do until certification. You cannot contest an election, you can't apply for a recount, and you can't print ballots for the runoff. And if I'm John Barrow, I want this to end pretty quickly, because Barrow beat Brad Raffensperger by 2.5 points in early voting, and he lost Election Day voting by 5 points. And that's what I think Democrats might want to start looking at.
All right. That is fascinating. And by the way, and we're going to talk about that Secretary of State's runoff in just a minute. But I want to point out, I paint this nightmare scenario, not because I really believe it's going to happen, but because we have such an amazing stalemate. If, in fact, Abrams gets to the point where she feels that there is no chance, she strikes me as a professional who understands the lay of the land. And, Greg, I can't imagine that at a certain point, if it becomes clear to her, she will not make a, you know, she'll concede the race.
Well, we haven't heard yet. I just mentioned how we haven't heard any Republicans criticizing why Senator Williams was arrested. We haven't heard any Democrats saying that Stacey Abrams should concede.
That's right.
That's because the count is still going on. But if she doesn't concede and this vote is certified national, let's call the race whatever, that's when you start getting frustration from Democrats and also worries about John Barrow, because this recount is also sucking up not just, you know, the early vote part, but the money and the attention. Yeah. No one's paying attention to John Barrow right now, and he's going to be in a runoff no matter what.
Amy, I'm late for a break, but you're going to get one last comment.
Well, just very quick, I think what actually is also important in this, it doesn't matter if she concedes or or what happens in there. The only thing that matters is how the election results get certified,
right?
If they certify the election results and it turns out she conceded and, in fact, they certify that she won, the concession doesn't matter.
Okay.
Also, Nathan Deal can't transfer the power yet. Like, that doesn't happen until the results have been certified and in January when there's the inauguration.
You know, I'm like Chip Lake. I'm learning more about Georgia election law than I ever thought I would have to after 30 years of covering politics. This is Political Rewind. We've really got to get to a break, and we'll be back in just a minute.
You know, selling a car can be a hassle, but donating it is a whole different story. Let us take it off your hands or off your driveway and turn it into public radio and maybe even a tax deduction. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl, the host of Marketplace, and here is how to donate.
Call 877-GPB-1-CAR or donate securely online at gpb.org/cars. And thanks.
We're back on Political Rewind. I love the fact that Buddy Darden, one of the most distinguished political figures in Georgia, kind of raises his hand a little bit to be able to speak. You've been raising your hand, Mr. Darden.
I have the solution, Bill. Here's what should happen. It's pretty evident that it's going to be certified in favor of Brian Kemp winning the governor's race. But the minute that certification takes place, Stacey Abrams ought to launch a campaign for the United States Senate. Never stop. Keep using this energy. Keep using these new voters. Keep using the changes she's brought about, and they've been good changes she's brought about.
Are you endorsing
in the voting
her
system.
On this show?
I'm saying, that she ought to move forward, and she ought to run for the United States Senate against someone who I think does not represent the views and values of the people of Georgia.
Well, Greg, that may be one of the reasons that she is really sticking in there with this whole thing, because she is looking ahead. ahead.
And the Kemp campaign tweeted something about that today. She's too busy printing her signs up, Stacey for Senate. But there's a legitimate chance that she is going to run for Senate in 2020. She's said nothing about it publicly at all. But think about it. There's a whole range of other Democratic contenders who are thinking about challenging David Perdue. But she'd clear the field, I imagine, in a heartbeat, especially after getting 49% of the vote in this election.
I have one last question before we move on, because I do think the Secretary of State's race and Chip's raising the question about it is really interesting. But one last question, Greg, why do you imagine, given that we're a week later, a week ago tomorrow, Governor Deal invited Brian Kemp into his office and congratulated him on being the next governor of Georgia. Governor Deal has been such a cautious, thoughtful governor, processed things in a relative, calm manner. Why did he do that day and be open now a week later to questions about whether Kemp is going to be the governor?
I mean, I think he generally believes the figures that the Kemp's campaign are putting forward, that there is no mathematical chance. Although I'll have to say that there is also, we're also seeing some early votes and mail-in ballots from counties that are 100% reported still coming in, not huge numbers, but still coming in that have narrowed his lead. But I think that the governor believes what Kemp's campaign is pushing about this mathematical impossibility.
All right. Well, we're going to watch this and continue to report it in the days ahead. We'll still be talking about it on Political Rewind on radio on Friday and TV on Sunday. Let's go to the Secretary of State's race. We've got this Brad Raffensperger and John Barrow runoff, Barrow being the Democrat. Greg, I didn't know until Chip Lake just mentioned it that they cannot print any of the runoff ballots until we know for sure there isn't going to be a gubernatorial candidate on the ballot. There's that problem. And then, as you point out, all the oxygen right now is being sucked up by the governor's race. I pity both Raffensperger and Barrow trying to get any attention and get people thinking about voting.
And it's a fascinating and really important race, especially given all these voting rights issues and questions we've had the last couple of years with the governor's race. And think about it from this perspective, too. You've got a centrist Democrat running against the tradition, I guess, in Georgia right now for progressives. You've got a real centrist who voted against Nancy Pelosi. He voted against Obamacare. He voted against, he voted for gun rights expansions, things like that, who's really running counter to the whole progressive narrative in Georgia. Will progressive Democrats who got behind Stacey Abrams also get behind him? And what will Stacey Abrams do? Will she play a significant role? Jim Galloway wrote a column about that ran yesterday, where John Barrow is essentially, you have to ask her.
Right.
We don't know what she's going to do yet. Right. She's consumed with her race.
Chip. Well, and I think the important thing to watch on this runoff is, will you see some of the same people who filed some of these lawsuits who are complainants in these lawsuits? Will they also file a lawsuit to possibly delay
the runoff
date? Because this is a 51-49 state. We are a purple state. That's accurate. It's hard to look at the data and not come to that conclusion. But in order for John Barrow to have a chance to winning this race, I think it's hard to make an argument that you can't have a full week of early voting. At this point in time, we are getting very close to being in danger of early voting commencing on the 26th of November. If that happens, there could easily be a lawsuit to say, hey, let's push it a week, 2 weeks, whatever we have to do, so that we can make sure we give people of Georgia an opportunity to early vote for a week.
All right. I know this is getting into the weeds.
It is.
But we now have an acting Secretary of State, Robin Crittenden, since Kemp gave up the job. Does her tenure last until there's another Secretary of State? Or, in fact, is she out of office in January? Is she limited by what would normally be the term that a new Secretary of State would take office?
Her commission stands until her successor is elected and sworn in.
All right,
so
curious.
She can be there indefinitely. And I think so far she's getting pretty good marks from both sides. And so I think that might be the solution to just let us stay there a while.
I want to keep this with you for a moment, because you came in here today. You mentioned it in an email to me yesterday. When this runoff eventually does take place, the Barrow-Raffensperger runoff, you're convinced your county if they show up to vote, is a bright blue county, and they'll go with Barrow. What the heck is happening to Cobb County, buddy?
If they show up to vote. A good bit of it is changing demographics, and a good bit of it, especially in the Atlanta suburbs, is anti-Trump. Now, we've heard this story over and over about what a great president he is and all the wonderful things he's doing and the Republicans being united behind him, but they do so at their peril because Trump is running very poorly among the independents in Cobb County. Now, you probably saw carried the case for every single Democrat, including Stacey Abrams came out 30,000 votes ahead of her Republican opponent. So, and we also were contributing to the fact that in Cobb County, we changed two legislative seats over. We caused a Democratic senator to be reelected who many people thought were in trouble. A school board race turned over, and we were contributors to the 6th district election as well. And in the 11th district, this is the most amazing thing, Bill, in the 11th district.
Which is where?
Which is part of Cobb County, starting in Cherokee, Bartow, yeah. Cobb, and okay. Actually down to Buckhead, with the largest number of votes being in Cobb. The Cobb Countyan, who was running as a Democrat, a young African-American assistant solicitor general, got more votes in Cobb County than the congressman who was running for re-election.
I didn't know the 11th dipped into Buckhead.
Remember Ed Lindsay?
Oh, that's right, of course, who will be on the show next week. By the way, so Amy, what's interesting about all this to me, historically, is that I moved to Georgia to cover politics in 1983. The first race I covered was a special election pitting, remember Larry McDonald, the right-wing congressman from Cobb County, had been killed in Korean Air 007, shot down by a Russian airplane. No doubt the right-wing conspirators had it because McDonald was on the flight. His widow, Kathy McDonald, ran in that special election, and she faced a young Democratic district attorney in that race, whose name was George Buddy Darden. And Darden, you won that race, so Democrats, you were part of that. Look, Cobb County was a Democratic county in most ways back then.
I was the last last Democratic district attorney. I was the last Democratic congressman from the area up until just recently when Lucy McBath was elected.
Right.
Buddy, I hate to tell you, but as much as Cobb swung, Gwinnett swung even further.
Yeah. Oh, you're absolutely
Gwinnett
right.
Gwinnett County in 2014 was a 55-point Nathan Deal win. It was a 57-point Stacey Abrams win. Five House seats and two Senate seats. Two Senate seats? Well, kind of. At least one Senate seat, and then Fran Miller's is close there, flipped. And, of course, that's why we have the really close 7th District race with Woodall.
All right.
Demographics are changing. There's no question about it. But you don't change that quickly unless there's a political dynamic that is very powerful. And when the first 15 counties came in on election night, they were smaller counties. They were scattered throughout the state. They were rural counties. Brian Kemp outperformed. Donald Trump did tremendously in the rural areas, and he underperformed incredibly in the suburban areas. Kemp outperformed Trump in every one of those counties. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the flip side was when the big counties started coming in, underperformed as well. And so it was close race, but it's incredible to look at the math and see how much we've changed in 2 years.
Hillary Clinton won the Cobb 79%. Stacey Abrams 84%.
Amazing. Wow. All right. I have a bonus question for this panel. If Brian Kemp does in fact take the governor's office in January, he ran to the right as a candidate. He was a very conservative candidate for governor. But he did lose those metro suburbs. And I have to wonder, as you look, forget about whether you want comedy and civility just for the sake of that, so you can work with Democrats across the aisle. Greg, your bonus question is, does Brian Kemp have to, the minute he gets into office, be thinking about 2020 and whether or not he can afford to stay as far to the right as he ran his campaign, or has to move back to the center in hopes that you somehow can bring some of those suburban voters back to the Republican fold in 2020?
That's top of every Republican's mind. I mean, I've already heard from his strategist saying that his reelection battle is already beginning. They've got to rebuild infrastructure in the suburbs because, Georgia is going to flip blue. if Democrats keep on clobbering Republicans in the suburbs like they did last week. And there's no doubt about it. And that's why I don't think anyone, any Republicans, are saying that Georgia's not a battleground state, because you've seen it go from a 10-point deal win to an 8-point deal win to a 5-point Trump win to now 1.5-point maybe Kemp win.
So, Amy, that is why you couldn't ask for a more exciting time to be a political scientist, a political leader, or a journalist in Georgia right now.
I think it's very true, and I think it's sort of showing sort of more national trends, because another issue that's also coming into it as well is that the incoming class, if you compare it, the Republican in Congress of the Republican class versus the Democratic class, the incoming Republican class is 90% white males. And there were a number of females who lost, Barbara Comstock, obviously Karen Handel, right, others in places. And so that is also concerning, whereas the Democratic Party, it's now down to that there's a lot less. You see a huge uptick in that. And I think we see a similar shift happening even in the Georgia State House. And that's going to, that I think that's sort of concern for the Republican Party.
And Chip, you're going to be right in the middle of all of that as Jeff Duncan's chief of staff. It's going to be a question that you'll have to talk about with your boss, with the Kemp people, if they in fact are in there in the governor's office. It's going to be a fascinating time for you.
It's going to be a great time to be down there. I'm looking forward to it. I've had a lot of conversations with my colleagues and also with elected officials that are concerned about the losses that we've taken at the legislative level. And it could have been worse. I mean, we're a 51-49 state. We just had a 51-49 election. So we lost some seats in the Senate and the House. But as I told all of them, it could get worse if we don't do something to kind of stop the water from leaving, you know, going over the dam or going through the dam.
Buddy, you get the last word before the break.
I'm going to defer to Chip on this. If he has a different opinion, I'll accept it. But before this race came along for governor, Brian Kemp was a pretty reasonable, kind of a moderate kind of fella. And he took off to the right pretty big time, embraced Trump. And I said this on the program, I'll say it again. He's not the hick he pretended to be during the primary. And so he's got to figure some way to come back to the middle and govern. It's one thing to get reelected, but even more importantly, he's got to govern.
All right.
Would you say the same is true if Stacey Abrams were to win her election? She certainly campaigned far more progressive than she was when she was in the legislature.
I think that's a good observation. However, I think she probably is pretty committed to most of the things she said.
Sure.
All right. We've got to get another break out of the way. When we come back, Greg Bluestein, I don't know how he has time to do all these different kinds of reports. He had a great piece this morning about what the state of Georgia was about to offer Amazon. You remember Amazon? They were thinking about having a building a new headquarters. Georgia thought we had the inside track. Boy, was that wrong. This is Political Rewind.
On the next Fresh Air, actor Steven Yeun of The Walking Dead and Sorry to Bother You. He stars in the new film Burning. And Sandy Tan talks about her new documentary Shirkers, about when she was 19 in 1992 and was conned by her own mentor, a man twice her age. She was making her first film, he was directing it, but then he disappeared and stole the footage. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 on GPB and gpbnews.org.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. Amy Steigerwald, Chip Lake, Buddy Darden, Greg Bluestein in the studio. I'm Bill Nygut. By the way, Tom Faust just sent me a note saying Kevin McCarthy just won his leadership election. He will not be Speaker of the House because that's not going to happen, but he is going to be the minority leader. And by the way, speaking of leadership elections, the bloodletting already started in the state Senate yesterday, Greg Bluestein. What happened to Brian Kemp's brother-in-law?
Yeah, he lost his leadership post as state senator. Mike Dugan was elected to that role. So we have a little bit of a reshuffling there. And of course, with Jeff Duncan coming in as lieutenant governor, it's going to be a whole new leadership slate.
There. You know, we're not going to get into that today. But your colleague, Jim Galloway, wrote a piece some time ago saying it didn't really matter whether Jeff Duncan or
Sarah Riggs-Amico
won, that both of them were going to be ignored by members of the Senate. I'm sure Chip Lake would disagree with that. We'll watch on that one. All right. Greg Bluestein, we know now that Amazon is going to Crystal City. For those of you, you know, when you land at National Airport, there's all those big buildings over there. That's just sort of, I always called it the city by the airport. That's Crystal City. It's a pretty good location. And they're going to be at Long Island City, too.
But you really had the inside track today on what Georgia was prepared to offer to get them here.
Yeah, Georgia's been keeping its offer of incentives like a trade secret. We knew generally that it would be a big, huge figure of $1 billion plus, and we knew that the governor was prepared to call a special session right around now if it came to that. Obviously, it didn't. But what we did know were the specifics of the state's offer, and we got those details late last night. And they're pretty. There's a lot. Overall, we're talking more than $2 billion worth of publicly funded incentives.
Which is how much they're getting between New York and Virginia.
Yeah, Virginia's number is more like $500 million, and New York's is more like $1.5 billion. So more than both the states offered for this project. And, of course, it ended up being split up. But some of the other perks were what really caught our eyes. That includes a state-funded academy on-site at Amazon's campus to train employees, offer them crash courses in coding, and also give them undergraduate and graduate coursework, an exclusive lounge with free parking at the Hartsfield-Jackson Airport, an Amazon...
Don't you guys get that at the AJC?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
An Amazon-dedicated car, a MARTA, renaming rights, the option to buy land near the airport, near an airport hotel that would just be an Amazon experience center. It goes on and on and on. And some of the renderings for this project were pretty impressive, too. One of the renderings even had a park that would span the downtown connector. It would kind of connect the Amazon's Midtown campus if Amazon wanted to go there. So there's a lot of different options. And a lot of people are upset that the state would be offering these
types of incentives. Were we going to change the name of the city?
We were going to change the name of the street, maybe not the city, but there was a community down in South DeKalb County that was saying, we'll rename to Amazon the city as well if Amazon wants to move there.
Well, Amy, it occurs to me that you can go back to Georgia State and talk to the leaders of your university and say there's going to be a lot of buildings over at the Gulch where GSU can expand now that Amazon isn't moving in over there.
Hey, we took Turner Field. Right? We're coming for the Gulch, and there we go. We're just spreading all over the place.
All right. I mean, it's gone. I'm not even sure what more we can save. Georgia made the best effort it could. I'm not sure. There's an awful lot of critics right now, an awful lot of people who are saying that Amazon knew all along where it was headed, that they turned this into a bidding war. So maybe we got drawn into that.
But it does also raise questions about what should be kept secret from the public, because when you're offering this huge amount of incentives, more than Georgia had ever offered before, $2 billion plus, and it wouldn't have been publicly disclosed. If Amazon had said yes, we wouldn't know about it until after the deal is done, right? The only reason we know about this now is because Amazon said no. So lawmakers passed about 15 years ago legislation that made all this trade secret so that other competing states couldn't get these details. But still, there is a compelling, it seems, need for the public to know some of these details.
All right. I want to talk briefly. By the way, some of you on Facebook Live have pointed out that we have not talked about the runoff that's coming up between Lindy Miller and Chuck Eaton for a public service commission seat. And we will do that between now and whenever a runoff actually happens. So stay with us on that. Let's turn now just briefly to the special legislative session. Chip, we now know the governor has unveiled one of the main reasons he called this session to get legislators to approve relief for all those devastated areas in South Georgia by Hurricane Michael. It's a $270 million package of direct aid. Now, we expect the feds will eventually pay this back, but for the time being, the governor says they need the cash now. We can't wait for the feds. And then it's something like $200 million in tax credits to help farmers get their fields replanted to get back to work. But one of the things I'm curious about, Chip, is there's now a budget bill that's been introduced. And although there's limits on what the governor wants to have happen, I think I'm correct to say that you've got a budget bill out there. People could start hanging Christmas ornaments from it, can't they?
They can, and that's what makes special sessions so unique and so much fun. And so, I think the governor's chief of staff, Chris Riley, even said in an article that James Salzer, Greg's colleague at the AJC, wrote that with respect to just giving aid to Southwest Georgia, they could have done that without a legislative session. But there are other things on the agenda, I think, that the governor wants to get accomplished, certainly that tax package with Delta. So I think they want to get that off of their plate so that the new governor won't have to deal with that issue. We'll wait to see how this is. And John Meadows, the rules chairman, passed away. Stomach cancer yesterday. And so you know, they wanted to get in and out of session pretty quickly. I don't know. When I came in today, I did not know when those services were. But does that slow it down a day or two? And what does that look like by the time we get to the end of it? It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. The other thing, we know that there's money for this new training program at Paulding County Airport.
Yeah, it's about $35 million, if I remember correctly. And yeah, this is really interesting because it essentially ends any effort to commercialize Paulding County Airport.
So there's two Delta bills.
Two Delta bills, because Delta really did not want that airport to be commercialized.
And there's also money for a new medical school at Mercer University, I think.
Governor Deal's alma mater. And it would be in Columbus, if I remember correctly.
Yes, it would be a campus in Columbus. So, Amy, this is fascinating because of this notion that, you know, special sessions are supposed to be limited by what the governor says should happen. But you always have to keep your eye on what those guys are doing and women are doing under the Gold Dome, don't you?
Well, they have to respond to their constituents, and so they've got their own issues. Yes, South Georgia was hit, but other areas have been hit as well. They're recovering from different things that have happened there that they're still trying to come back from. And so they've got their own things that they want to make sure that get addressed, and this is a really good time to do it.
Buddy? I'm very proud of Gary Black because he led the ticket throughout the state,
and
he's been very, very effective and kept a low profile, got the job done.
Yeah, there are very few people who wouldn't, Democrats and Republicans alike, who don't think that Gary Black has done a good job. His Democratic opponent tried hard and made a good effort at coming up with reasons why he ought to take that job, but Gary Black has just been enormously popular in the work that he's done.
Especially after Hurricane Michael, he basically moved down to Southwest Georgia to help the response to those agricultural areas that were so impacted by the storm.
All right, we are completely out of time for today's Rewind. Thanks for an awfully good discussion. Former Democratic Congressman Buddy Darden, Amy Steigerwalt, Georgia State University, the new chief of staff to the non-runoff.
Well, it hadn't been certified yet, so we're waiting on certification.
Right. Yeah. Jeff Duncan, you're already working, aren't you?
Indeed. Indeed.
Right. I hope your boss tells you you can come back, because as we're transparent about what you're doing.
That's right.
We'd love to have you come back.
I'd love to come back. Thanks for having me.
Greg Bluestein, are you going to get any rest at any point soon?
Tamar just reminded me yesterday that next week is Thanksgiving. I forgot about that. So hopefully next week.
And your kids' birthdays.
And my kids' birthdays. Saturday is their party.
All right. Well, happy birthday to the Bluestein kids. That's it for us for today's show. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll be back on Friday. And then you can watch us at 2 o'clock on Friday, of course. And then Sunday, the TV show is on at 9 a.m. Yes, some of you have said, well, how come it's the same show that you're doing on the radio? We're looking for a different audience. So if you have friends who don't listen to the radio, tell them that at 9 a.m. on Sunday mornings, they can turn on GPB TV and see us right there with our hair combed and in neat clothes. I'm Bill Nigut. See you all again on Friday.